Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Deeper Podcast here at Friendship Church. I'm Austin Slater. That's Pastor Dan Kennis. Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Austin. How are you?
Doing well. Our kid hit the 4-month sleep regression last night, so I am a little out of it. So I'm going to be trying to follow my notes, but we'll see how that goes. Hope you all are doing well. Hope you're enjoying the end of summer. It is so weird to be at the point now where people are going off to college. And since I'm no longer in school myself and I don't have a kid in school yet, I kind of exist in this amorphous, who knows what time of year it is.
Yeah.
But things start to pick up and it's a fun time of year.
Yeah. Yes. I guess in fitting with our theme from this past week, right? There's kind of these seasons and cycles every year. And certainly the start of school is one we feel personally in our families often, not always, but often depends where we're at. But then in the church life too, we have this rhythm. There's a lot of things beginning again, nice month. And yeah. So things ramping up, right? You feel that busyness planning and all that, but it's good too. It's good to hit that particular season again as well. As much as I love summer.
Yeah. As much as we love the downtime, it is good to be doing things again. And with that, I guess you gave us a teaser, but can you give us a more complete, like, what did we learn yesterday, last week?
Yeah. So in this number series, we're getting toward the end of it now, but we were thinking about the number 7, or actually a multiple of 7 in this case. And 7's a very significant number, perfection, kind of completeness, number that appears a lot in scripture from creation onward. And we were looking specifically at this year of Jubilee, which was supposed to be celebrated every 7 times 7 years, so 49th year, then going into the 50th, depending on how you read those verses. But Leviticus 25 describes that. And we noted how, yeah, that was given, like, okay, do this. There's all this kind of release that goes on there. And the people never actually did it from what we can tell. But Jesus then brings this about in his ministry and probably more than one occasion preached from that Isaiah passage, which points to this hope of Jubilee in the year of the Lord's favor. And so we talked about what was the initial intention of the Jubilee and some things that were connected very closely with it. And then how is what Jesus is bringing about then the connection there and his pointing to release and pointing to the atonement he's giving and this now home again where the Lord's returning to his people. And lots of good stuff. And so noting that, that's, of course, very good news that Jesus comes to bring that about. And we're already seeing that. We believe that door has been opened now. And then because of that, let me emphasize, too, there's an urgency, right? You need to hear this. As he was being rejected there in Nazareth, Jesus points out to them, we didn't go into those verses too much, but points out to them, yes, this has happened before. God will go to other people, and they didn't like that and tried to kill him.
That's the most productive thing you can do when you dislike someone.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's partly because they understood what he was saying. And it wasn't that they didn't share those hopes, interestingly enough, for these things that God would bring about. It was just hard for them to grasp that you're going to bring them about. You're embodying this.
This is not in the way I wanted it. Yeah, we know you.
No, so you can understand humanly someone that has struggled, but also be saddened by it as well. Yeah, rejection there. But anyways, that's what we talked about a little bit this past week. A little different flow. We kind of tied two passages together, but yeah, it was fun to go into it.
It was really fun, and it was really good to revisit because, you know, I grew up singing, and we sang it at church on Sunday, you know, behold, he comes.
Yes,
the days of Elijah. Days of Elijah, you know, and it's the year of Jubilee. And so that was one of the things that, like, that language was very core to my upbringing in the faith. And so I'd heard a little bit about it, but actually I really appreciated this being one of the first real deep dives I think I've done on the topic outside of just, yeah, it was this thing they used to do. They used to set, you know, forgive debts of people, all that stuff, right? But it was interesting because as we were talking about it and we looked in Leviticus, and Leviticus is, some people might say it's the most boring book of the Bible next to Numbers simply because it's a long list of the law.
Yeah.
Right? These are the religious laws and practices that the people of Israel were to follow. And it can be really easy for us now, especially now that we are, you know, Jesus has come. We are under a new covenant, not the old covenant. To look back on some of those old religious practices that we would have inherited otherwise had Jesus not yet come. Man, that's some weird stuff. Like, you know, we don't vibe with all that. Both Dan and I are wearing blue jeans right now. That would go against the ban against mixed use fabrics. That's the most, I think, commonly cited one that we're like, yeah, we don't do that anymore. We're under a new covenant. But we still do societally, and often for very good reason, hold to parts of that old covenant and parts of that practice of the old covenant as really important for our modern lived faith. I think the Ten Commandments is a really good example. I love the Ten Commandments.
Don't get me wrong. Because they're on the record.
I love the Ten Commandments. They're very helpful. They are very good. I think they're good for teaching, especially for kids. Like, that's a great way for them to get familiar with some of these guidelines of the faith. But we pick and choose what old covenant practices we do. We don't do the genes anymore. We do the old covenant. I don't think I have ever heard at least a Protestant say, yeah, this year of Jubilee stuff where we forgive everyone's like material debts and return land back to their, you know, let's do that. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever heard anyone recommend that. There's a million different reasons that could be, but I guess I just wanted to get your thoughts on why we seem to pick and choose what old covenant practice still matters, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been kind of a long tradition in regards to that and kind of seeing the laws, for instance, in Leviticus or Exodus or really the whole of the Torah, and seeing them in different categories, right? So I'd say the main two, the ceremonial laws, which has to do with like the clothing, get all these chapters about infectious skin diseases, about mold in houses and things like that. These ceremonial laws versus the moral laws, which gets more into the Ten Commandments. I think the one that's really interesting if you want to you know, really get people debating a topic is what to do with the Sabbath. Is that ceremonial or is that moral? Even in the Reformed tradition, there's lots of debate about that, right? But anyways, that's the two major distinctions that often are made. And often then from that, people look at the ceremonial law as being fully fulfilled in Jesus Christ. In other words, yeah, there's a reason these certain washings and all the animal sacrifices don't need to be offered anymore because Jesus has come and fulfilled those completely. As far as the moral laws, well, these are more long-standing principles, like how I treat my neighbor, right, as regards to their well-being, their wife, their property, all those kinds of things, and how I relate to the Lord, of course, as far as how I serve him, how I worship him, how I honor him, his name, those kind of things. And so that's kind of been the distinction. And seeing then the moral ones, well, those principles haven't changed. Jesus says, I haven't come to abolish those things, but to fulfill them. And so it says, well, we still need to abide by those moral laws, as it were, right? These aren't changing things, whereas the ceremonial ones, and a lot of that goes to Jesus' own teaching about like food laws, for instance, and it's not what goes into your body that makes you unclean, it's what comes out of you. And even in Mark, I think there's a little note in doing so, Jesus declared all foods clean. I said, oh, okay, that's a big deal, you know, or in an instance with Peter. But so that's in short, and there's much more you can go into it, but that's in short kind of why there's been that. You could say it, from the outside, it might look like an inconsistency in dealing with some of those things. And I think in general with biblical interpretation, that's always the challenge of what's principle and what's application, right? Old or New Testament. Like what is like, oh, that's true for all time versus, yeah, that was applicable then versus, you know, even in the course of scripture, sometimes not applicable later on, let alone for our day. And I think a helpful, you mentioned the song, and I think actually it's a helpful one, you know, because some of the verses of that song get into, you know, these are the days of Elijah. These are the days of your servant David. What's going on there? Well, we talked about Jesus bringing about the year of Jubilee. Well, there's all these foretastes when God was doing incredible things through Elijah, even if that was a bad time amongst his people, or David's, there's all these foretastes. Yeah, this is where things are going. And Jesus says now, you know, he's embodying that. He's bringing it to bear. It's interesting with the year of Jubilee. We noted that from everything we can tell, it seems like the people never actually did that. Even
crazy.
Yeah, even in the church, right? This is Israel. It's not just like, all right,
yeah,
you know, we're going over here to the Greeks. And they're like, what are you talking about? You know, this was in Israel. This was the church. And still, like, no, this isn't very practical or whatever. Like we said, they didn't even do the Sabbath years every 7 years, let alone this one. And I think part of that is God's giving these, you know, commands and things, and it's always looking forward to the kingdom, right? Because we know even with the ones that pretty much everybody agrees with, right? We think about murder and, you know, I know there's lots of breakouts, but largely there's a agreement like how we should treat each other. There's laws around the world in some of that effect. We still know we break these things and we fall short of it. And of course, Jesus takes them deeper. We see even more how I don't keep these things, right? I insult people. And so there's always that kingdom bent, like this is where we're going. And I think for the year of Jubilee, that's part of what you acknowledge. Like, boy, this sounds great. Like canceling debts. Everybody returned to their own problem. Property. The problem with that is, what does that look like practically?
Right.
Imagine trying to practice that, say, in the United States with 300 plus million people. And like, man, that would be, our government can't handle small tasks. Bigger ones. But it also, you'll recognize like, how healing that is, how life-giving if you know that's coming. And even if we were trying to do that well, we know we'd abuse it in our sinfulness, right? So, I mean, there's that kingdom forward-looking. And I think for us, and this is maybe some of where you go with future questions here in our time, but for us, it's how do we announce that in our obedience? So if you want to tie in, you know, what is obedience about? And you think about whether you're looking at the Ten Commandments or Jesus' royal command of love, love God, love neighbor. What's that about? Is that just so I don't get into trouble? Sure. I would say it's more on the positive side to proclaim the kingdom, right? And to be doing kingdom work, which in this case is to show like, hey, there's release. There is a home.
Right.
These kinds of things, I think so often, and I'll lump myself in, I can bring up obedience as just like a, keep the hammer from falling on me kind of thing, rather than like, Jesus has done all it's taken. He's brought in the year of Jubilee. He's done all these things, and he calls us to follow him. Because we're to be his light. We're to be the ones who are doing the work of the kingdom now until he comes again, and that's coming in full. So anyways, there's maybe a tie-in in all of that is we can get caught up in, you know, trying to figure out exactly, oh, this one doesn't apply to that and what doesn't apply. There's good work there, but I think overall,
I'm missing the point.
Yeah, we kind of can miss, and the Spirit is helping us, hopefully, to see when we're honestly approaching our lives before the Lord, you know, what is this about? Yeah. And how do we put to in what Jesus is proclaiming?
Yeah.
And act it out, right?
Well, that is a really good segue for me into my next question, because, you know, we do hear, going back to the Ten Commandments a bit, we hear a lot of talk about like, well, let's put the Ten Commandments back in our schools. Let's, you know, and there's a lot of discussion among Christians about like, how do we instill into a culture that is not faith-based? Into a culture that does have a written into the Constitution separation of church and state. How do we insert into this culture the values that we think are really important? And it can be really hard for us to try. And we've talked about this on the podcast. Like, it's really, you can't expect people who don't live according to the same faith convictions,
right,
to live by our faith convictions. So then how do we go about wisely trying to like be like, here's what I think is good and right, without getting into what I'll talk about later, which is kind of closing the door on psyche.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's understanding that even as we embody this the best we can, there's still going to be rejection or opposition.
Oh, for
so maybe that's the mindset. We see Jesus here. He's doing this, you know, and he's proclaiming that good news. He's proclaiming the hope of Isaiah has come, and yet, you know, in that moment, they're going to push him off the cliff in his hometown. I mean, so that's there. And I think that's part of the perspective of knowing, like you said, you know, we go out to share the hope, but we know that God's got to do this work of convicting hearts and doing that, and that having people see that what we believe is the wonderful truth of it and the reality of it. But I think there is, you know, the showing versus telling piece.
Yeah.
There is a place, of course, to explain and tell. But I think we can go there so quickly and think, oh, that will solve it. If someone just, you know, is told these things, they'll do that. And Paul teaches about the law. Like, it just increases. And we're told. And then we especially are like, oh, no, I'm not going to do it. I mean, it's our sit down in the nature. I see it all the time, right? I mean, you're talking about kids. Yeah, you'll learn even more. Like, there's just that, you're like, oh, what is that? But we hear, like, someone says to us, like, oh, you really should do 50 around this curve. Like, really? I'll see if I can use these. You'd like, I mean, just, there is that kind of, so, I mean, the telling, there needs to be that explanation often, but we need to show, I think even more so, we need to live out, you know, this good news.
Well, I love the old hymn, you know, they will know we are Christians by our love, not necessarily by our, you know, how well we write the Canon of Dort.
Right.
Well, you know, or by our statements and proceedings.
Right.
They'll know we are Christians by our love. And obviously that's not in scripture, that exact phrasing, but the point stands.
Right. Right. Well, and that phrasing comes from Jesus' words, you know, to his disciples in John there, you know, they'll know you are my disciples by the way you love one another. And you can see that's even specifically within the church. And even if you want to keep it there, like, oh, that work to do.
Yeah,
I mean, so, I mean, yeah,
and oh man,
and that's the reality of the struggle, right? And the hope is that the wonderful things we write, the wonderful things out there, wonderful that I'm saying from the pulpit, you know, this good news is matched by the way we live. There should be that cohesion, and obviously the humility to say, like, we're trying to do this. We don't always, you know, we mess up at times, and we have to own that. But hopefully, you're seeing both two strands, not like separately. Your telling is different than your showing. No, this is two pieces. Like, this is what we believe. This is who God is. This is what He's done. This is what He calls us. And you're seeing that, right? And that's, I think, really where, again, we can be the most effective. Acknowledging once more that even when you're perfectly in line, people were rejecting Jesus. Okay. So
yeah,
we know, yeah, He was being very upfront. He was going about it the right way. His words, His actions are matching up perfectly, and yet still that happens in the quote-unquote church.
Yeah.
There, the Sanhedrin, all that. And then, of course, out too, you know, with Rome and whatnot. But I think that embodiment, it, to kind of get back to the heart of your question, is so important for us. Like, why would we uphold, you know, you shall not murder? Or why to uphold, you know, not taking the Lord's name in vain? Well, what's that all about? Well, you know, it goes back to who we are and what we believe. And yeah, thinking about how we relate that, and it is different. You and I should have a different conversation in the church. If we both say we're committed to Christ as His followers, like, yeah, there's a different standard versus I'm meeting a neighbor of mine who is maybe from a different religious background, or, you know, saying, I don't believe any of that stuff. Like, you might have to work toward it in a different way. And you want to try to live it as consistently as possible, so maybe that leads to further conversation.
Well, very closely tied into that, where I want to go towards the end of our questions here, is, as you know, you talked about how Jesus is bringing this message in Jubilee, which is a message that, especially in the time, they would have understood, like, this is a thing to hope for and aspire to rejoice in, that gives relief, that gives comfort, that gives safety and security and freedom. And we obviously, you know that, yeah, the gospel of Jesus Christ is that. And He has come to fulfill that. And we're going to see that more and more, especially whenever He returns. However, the way that the church seems to have delivered that message oftentimes does not always come across as a message of Jubilee in that context. There was a recent study that came out, and I paid, of course, special attention to this because this is my generation, but a recent study came out in the last few weeks that said almost 50% of Gen Z, my generation, is hesitant, especially who are not already churched, who do not already go to church or live with that, are hesitant to go to church because the message that they have heard is one more of judgment and hypocrisy and restriction than one of freedom from sin, freedom, you know, all of this. Now, like we were saying earlier, there is going to be always be a part of people that are, well, since you're telling me not to do it, I don't want to do it.
Right.
And, you know, our sin nature, we don't like being told that we have been behaving poorly. We don't like having to correct bad behavior.
Right. Right.
And so there will always be that rejection on that sense. But for it to get to 50% of unchurched Gen Zers, that's statistically significant. That means that somehow in the way that we as Christians have been presenting our message here in the United States, we have not been presenting it in a way that will bring people in. It is not necessarily presented as a message of Jubilee,
right?
Even if it is a message of Jubilee,
right?
So how do we do that better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be interesting, and maybe you know this, but if the survey was saying, this is what they heard in that when they attended church, they heard that, or if this is kind of what they heard, you know, as far as the oppression.
Right. I'll have to look at the crosstabs especially, but by and large, from what it was people who are no longer part of a religion or have never been a part of a religion. So this does include people who have practiced.
And I was spiritualized.
Yeah.
And I guess they're closely lumped together because the oppression is coming from somewhere.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah, and working to improve that, right? And I think, you know, all we can do is be honest about, you know, the gospels we received it, right? And even this Sunday, tried to present yeah, this is good news, but there's an urgency to it, right? Because Jesus left out the part about vengeance there, that, you know, which is the very next part of the verse. Stop halfway in a verse, and the people are probably like, but keep going, you know. And but he just says it's, yeah, it's not like he's just saying that's no more, but like, you know, that comes at a different time, maybe in a different way than they expected to. And I think for us in the church, we maybe always need to look at ourselves too, first and foremost, right? Jesus is talking a lot, pretty much always, in the church, in the Gospels, to the religious leaders and things, people who are steeped in the tradition, to saying like, hey, you maybe need to look at your own hearts here and your own approach. And so that constant looking, how are we doing about this, like we're talking about today? How are we living? Is this matching up with the gospel? That's a great place to start, because, you know, the more we're self-examining, the more we're humble and looking at that and willing to repent or turn or correct maybe some of the ways we're going about it, that's going to impact, of course, how we're perceived. I think on the, you know, kind of the closed door versus the open one, right? It's so interesting, because I think, you know, in the parable of the lost sheep, you kind of get two examples of both of that. One we often say is kind of the opening of the front door, like, hey, come on in, you know, I was looking for the lost sheep. One we say is the closing in the back, people kind of going from the church, which kind of hits both audiences, right? Those who maybe had never been really in contact with the church, and those who are like, I'm out of here, right? This isn't for me. So I think Jesus, he has that picture in mind of those who have been outcast. And it's interesting in his ministry how he goes, right? He says, not the healthy that need doctor, it's the sick. And so making sure that, yeah, for those in our community around us, as we're interacting with those who are struggling, and there's addictions, of course, there's all kinds of sinful behavior. We know it in the church. It's certainly true outside the church. To proclaim that there is good news. There's forgiveness. I mean, just look at our message for this. There's atonement.
Yeah.
Jesus is saying, yeah, there's a home possible with God now. He's coming to dwell with his people again, because I'm going to give you forgiveness. Right? So that's possible, no matter how bad things have been, how far you think you are. And there's release, right? There's this like, oh, I can be free. I don't have to be encumbered by these addictions. They don't have to serve them or whatever these things are. And then I can be at rest with the Lord. I can be at home, right? And know that place. And of course, there's way more to it than just that, but making sure that message is heard. And yes, there might be a time you spend a lot of time with someone and maybe there's an out-and-out rejection. And then at the end, it might be the warning, like, hey, you know, the time's now. Maybe you don't want to hear it from me. But no, like, this is the opportunity to know the Lord. And he has said he's coming again. And at that point, that's it, right? And so, but I don't think you lead with that. No, I can understand. Jesus gives warning and encouragement.
Yeah.
Right? So I understand for us, like, if we never warn, I think we're missing the counsel, the wisdom of God and how Jesus does it in his ministry.
But also if we're constantly, and I think the example of Jesus going to sit with the tax collectors and the prostitutes is a good example of the other side.
Sure.
Where, you know, because the Pharisees' tendency was like, hey, these people, they know what they should do. They're not doing it. We're going to cut them out.
Right.
And Jesus said, no, actually, I'm going to go and be with them. It is not the healthy you need a doctor, but the sick.
Right. That's a good way to put it. Like, they'd already basically said, you are decided.
Yeah.
Like, you're done.
And I think I do think it's interesting in that, you know, we probably could think of, if we sat here and we're honest with ourselves, groups of people who we have decided are bad.
Right.
And groups of people who are like, yeah, they're not saved. They're not going to be. Jesus is more, you know. And I think that should be convicting for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Why give up hope? And, you know, I understand it's harder, you know, if someone's heard the good news and had that taste that says no. And even the Bible points this out, like, oof. You know, that's because they have, but there's so many who haven't encountered it at all. I mean, think about it. We see those, you're talking about surveys, we do them in our demographic community here as well. And like, there's a lot of people right around us here, let alone around the world.
I think I talked about this last year when it happened, but I was setting up for an outdoor service last year. And someone came by and was like, hey, what's going on? What's happening? And I was like, well, you know, we're doing our outdoor worship services here. He's like, okay, cool. It says on your sign, you're Christian Reformed. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Because like over there, it just says, you know, Reformed. And it's like, what, aren't you all churches?
Right.
And it's like, to us, those are really big, like we've split the denominations because of some of these differences. Right. But there are people here who came in our parking lot.
Right.
Who did not know about some of these things and had an opportunity to be like, I had an opportunity to be like, hey, well, yeah, you know, as a Christian, here's some thing. You can go into it as much or as little as you like, but that is something that, like, that is a very real thing here, even if we don't think it is.
Right. And that's, you know, to say there's lots of people who they know what a church is, perhaps, but they don't know about Jesus. They'd never, you know, that's been multiple generations removed maybe. And I don't think we've realized that. And some of it's from the privilege of growing up in the faith, right? And having multiple generations. We have that in the church. It's a blessing. But sometimes we are missing the fact that, man, there's a lot of people around us who had not heard the good news that we, yeah, almost take for granted at times, right? And it's such a good thing that we know we live it out. But man, they need to hear that hope and at least have that opportunity, right? And I think that's right. We, you know, in the church, there's a certain message, right? We need to be warning each other, hold each other accountable. Like, all right, man, you know, we know these things. This is a dangerous path for us. We have those conversations, you know, we have for generations.
Yeah.
And outside, you know, I appreciate Paul, like in half and we bring that up when he goes there. He's bringing warning, but it's not in the same way as they'll have for some of the people who oppose it and say the synagogues, where he's pretty direct and upfront, basically, you should know better kind of language. It's kind of like, you know, and now God's not giving us any more excuse because he's making known the good news about Jesus and he's explaining that. But that's a very subtle way of saying, like, hey, now's the time, guys, for you to see this versus saying, like, you fools, like, you know, kind of thing. He's just saying, yeah, you know, God's making, there's no more excuse now. He's making these things known. He's revealed to us his plan. So I think that's for us, we can, or Jesus, when he says to people, even on the edges, hey, don't keep going on sinning now. Now go live into this new life you've been given, right? It's not just like, hey, come hear this message of good hope. Yeah, it changes us, right? It should change the way we live. And yeah. So anyways, yeah, I think that's the challenge, right? Of balancing, you know, there is obviously an urgency to the message, but we want to be, to use the old word, winsome. We want people to believe. We shouldn't just want to tell people they're wrong. We should want them to know Jesus Christ. And sometimes that means pointing out, it's like, hey, this is error, you know.
But also, I don't know the last time someone convinced me I was wrong by saying, you're stupid and I'm right.
Well, especially given our interaction. Yeah. You know, it's like, I don't even know this person on social media, so of course I'm not. Versus like in a relationship. And that's, you know.
That's a whole other thing, but yeah.
Yeah, being relational with. Yeah, good news. So
what are we talking about next week?
So this week, Pastor Marshall's going to be leading us in a message from the book of Daniel. Well-known story, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the fiery furnace. So the number is 4 because there were 4 in the furnace. There's a 4th guy in that fire, says Nebuchadnezzar. And so he's going to talk about that. I think, you know, just to, you know, get you maybe looking forward to it, I think he's got some very tangible ways for us to connect with what goes on in the text, though.
I'll make sure to bring a fire extinguisher.
So, anyways, yeah, look forward to that. I'm sure it'll be great. I appreciate his messages. So look forward to that next week.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Dan, so much for your time and for your insight. Thanks to all of you, as always, for joining us. We will see you next week.